Okay, thank you very much. So we are learning Lehu Nishmat, Chana Shulamit Bat Shimon. Lady, you have to explain to us about the promising opera career. That's pretty interesting. Okay. All right, so just to give a little bit, first of all, I want to welcome all the parents. It's really wonderful to have you here. I think, A, it's great to meet you. B, it's nice for you to experience the learning that your sons are experiencing this year. Just usually Gemara is divided on Sunday through Wednesday, right? Divided by level and inclination and style. But in yeshiva, often there's something called Shir Klali, where the whole yeshiva learns the same Gemara once a week. So that's what you're experiencing today. And I think we can do a very interesting topic. And I just make two other introductory points. One is sometimes when halakha struggles to define something, it's because by definition it's hard to define. There's certain things that are easy to pin down in life and things that are much harder to pin down. So let's say we're trying to figure out adulthood. What every society will have some age where you're an adult and then you could vote, you could buy alcohol, whatever the case may be. So again, we could debate when it should be, but you could pick a date. You could say when people are 15, when people are 18, that's when the transition is, right? It's easier there to kind of pin things down. Clearly, if you're trying to define who has mental capacity, who's sane, that is not as easy to do. He says, oh, we'll give you the sanity test, and then if you score over 65, then, right, it's not so definable. So we're going to see how halakha is going to try to deal with it. But I think, again, we should realize it's inherently a difficult thing to define. Okay, the other thing we'll discover is an interesting fact about one of the most important rabbis of the 20th century. Probably most of you heard of Rav Moshe Feinstein, okay, who was arguably the greatest American posek of the 20th century. Okay, just to mention a famous psak of his, okay, which enables many of us in the room to enjoy life a lot more, right? Such as Hershey's chocolate and Ben Jerry's ice cream and the like. Because at the time of the Gemara, there was a gzeira, what's called Chol of Yisrael, right? That if milk's not coming from a Jewish source, maybe it's not kosher. Because you think about it, if you don't keep kashrut, would you really care if the milk comes from a kosher animal or from a non-kosher animal? So there's an idea that milk was supposed to come from a Jewish source. If you have Lubavitch relatives, Chabad is very mocking about this. Right? They were still, Daniel, you eat Chol Stam, Daniel? Okay, whoa. You're a firm guy. Okay. Wait, so you don't eat any local ice creams? What? Actually, in Israel, forget it. In Israel, it's much easier. Yeah, right.
In Israel, some flavors of Ben and Jerry's that
I eat. Okay. Yeah. Wow, okay, that's it. It's not so tough to be mocking Chol Yisrael in Israel. Okay, but in any case, Rav Moshe famously ruled that if you're in a country which has government supervision, and the government would fine a company if they lied about where their milk came from, that is sufficient. So many of our eating practices in America as a result of that tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay, but here's where things get interesting. People don't realize that Rav Moshe had an earlier career. Because if I ask all of you, where did Rav Moshe Feinstein live, what would you say? Lower East Side of Manhattan. Right? Because indeed, he was a posek there from 1936 to 1986. That's a long career, right? 50 years of being a posek on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Well, people don't realize that he was born in 1895. So that means 1895 to 1936 is 41 years, right? So he had 41 years before he came to New York, where he actually lived in Russia. So it also makes you realize it's a fascinating part of his life. That means he was a rabbi under the communists for a while, right? Because if he was left Russia in 1936, right, you think about when the Soviet Revolution was, so he had a good 19 years or so under the communist rule, right, where he was a rabbi. So that's just also quite interesting. And by the way, Rav Moshe really loved America. Okay, there's this tshuva he calls America Malchut Shel Chesed. Okay, so without having a little discussion about America right now, one of the reasons he loved America, well, if you spent 19 years under communist Russia, you also love America. Okay, so that puts it all in perspective. Okay, so not that there are other reasons to love America, but okay. So let's see, because I think this tshuva is kind of interesting. You'll see it's a bold tshuva. And it's early in his career. So if you look at the top line, okay, we'll see who remembers how to do this, guys. Okay, yeshiva guys, what year is Tuf Resh Pei Tet? Well, where's our mathematician here?
769.
Oh, what was that? Fine, very good. 1929, excellent. Okay, so think about it, it's 1929. That means Rav Moshe is a young rabbi, he's 34. Okay, now he was a bold posek, but it's easier to be bold when you're 65 than when you're 34. So let's see what happens. Let's get the case down. And we'll see what Rav Moshe is forced to address. Okay, here we go. Now, I know I gave you a long story here, but I thought we needed all the details about this fellow before we tried to make a ruling. Okay, so let's start with the second line there, Anaf Aleph. Uvda Ateliadi. So the story came to my hands. Be'echach od bebachuto nishtateh. Even in his youth, he was a little off. And what is his expression of insanity? Vishtuto shamar tzmo shu mashiach. Right, he says, He's the Messiah? He's not the only person in history who thought he was the Messiah. But that was this fellow's kind of expression of insanity. What did he do as a result? He loved to lead the services. I guess all things being equal, right? The Mashiach should be, has to be the chazan. Okay, so he loved to lead the services. And if they wouldn't let him, he would fight. No, I should lead. I'm the Mashiach. The Ira Shalakach Sefer Torah Barachimo. He once ran away with Sefer Torah. He would travel around for obvious reasons. He needs to go fix the world. Right? He can't be stationary in one location. Okay. Umat minam. Okay, a little Hebrew for our guys here. What's choteif? He would seize, good. And mat minam? Bury them, hide them, right? Tamun is something hidden. You know what a matmon is in modern Hebrew? A matmon is a treasure, because you hide treasures. Okay, so he would grab objects and steal them. Achi inu abalim kesef l'tzorach nechazarim. So you kind of coerce people to give chesed, right? I'll only give you your, you know, if you want to see your basketball again, give some money to charity. Okay. Like most people like this, he liked to pontificate. He'd go to a tree and give a lecture to people. Sometimes he would even be naked. Because what do we have according to Sefer Bereshit? Well, apparently in pre-sin existence, you didn't really need clothing, right? When did Adam and Chava discover they need clothing? Having sinned, and then they're embarrassed, then they need clothing. So this guy could kind of get back to that state of pre-chet. So he would walk around naked. Okay, okay, so I think many of us would probably conclude this guy does not have full mental capacities, therefore he should be invalid to do all kinds of things in the legal system, right? Maybe he won't be able to buy things, he won't be able to marry a woman. Okay, boy, but that thing's getting more complicated. But outside of this messianic fervor, he's totally with it. So now things are getting a little tricky already, because he can have normal conversations about other topics. Right? He's just he might say to you, oh, you want to talk about it? Good, just avoid all messianic topics. Right? Just talk about, you know, the Chicago Bulls. Then you'll have a good conversation. Yeah?
Didn't either Elisha or
Eliyahu
also go around naked for a few years?
Ben! There you go. Okay, so Ben already asked me in Chavruta, but maybe this description fits some prophets that we know of.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would point out that in the prophetic example, we have people who already have their identity as prophets established. And then, once you bring that as a prophet established, you could say, okay, God told me to do this. It might seem a little odd, but I have my prophetic identity established. I would say this fellow does not have an established prophetic identity. And then outside of that, then I think the craziness category seems to be a more reasonable explanation. Okay? Great. So now, let's go back over here to where we're in Ramosha. Now, what gets a little trickier about this fellow is not only have to evaluate him in this state when he has all these messianic issues, but he also has not always been the same. Let's see. The Kodem Kiddushin, before the marriage, Hezman Rav, Erech Gimel Shin Abiyotir, Becheskat Chalim. Now, I'm curious, because this is a very misleading word. If they don't got this, you really make my day. What does the word Chalim mean? Very good. Very good. How'd you know that? Okay, that was very good. I'm sure you're all going to think the word chole. Okay, but actually, chet lamed mem actually means to be healthy. In modern Hebrew, if you go to a beit hachlama, it's a place to recover. Okay, it's an unusual word. It actually appears twice in Tanakh, once in Eov and once in Yishayahu. But chet lamed, I didn't know the bear, I just looked it up before you showed. But chet lamed mem means to recover. Okay, so for about 3 years before the wedding, he was great. Shelo asa shum aseh shtut. So notice, all these things, he had a three-year period where he wasn't doing it. He wasn't naked, he wasn't climbing trees to pontificate. Okay, so it sounds like he was doing pretty well. But he was even like an elementary school teacher. Ach atzvut hayi nikarla. But he looked sad. V'lo ya'oiv b'chal moto l'sokheach arbe b'chivar neshe. Fine. The Eze Yamim Achar Nisuin, but after the marriage, unfortunately, so let me just finish the case here. Nit Kalkel Opam, Vitchil Lasod Maseh Shtut. Okay, so everyone got it again? So in his youth, he did a lot of these crazy things manifest in his thinking that he's the Mashiach. 3 years before the wedding, he stopped and he gets married. But then after the wedding, unfortunately, he has a relapse and starts doing these endeavors again. Okay, and then, now we're going to skip down a little bit. And now, give me 1 second here. Let's keep reading, sorry. Actually, no, I'll do it outside. But now again, he went through a 2-year period that he's not doing this again. Okay? So again, we got his trajectory down. All the Maaseh Shtut in his youth, not before his marriage. He relapses after the marriage to start doing these things again. And now for 2 years has stopped. And now his wife, understandably, would like to be divorced from this fellow. Right, so it's hard for me to live with this guy. I never know when he's going to go crazy. So she would like to be divorced. So Rav Moshe has, and again, he's a young rabbi. Like, this is a big question. This is a difficult question. He's this young 34-year-old rabbi, but he needs to answer. He's, again, living under the Soviet authorities. So he says that he spoke to him. We'll skip down now to the last 6 lines. Okay? And he says, I spoke to him. He seems pretty normal. Okay, the line that begins with the Diburo, Kibikach Gamor. Okay? Kifishu, you know, and he's a Chol Anashim Shu Be'ed HaGei. Yotem Asar Anashim. There's a whole bunch of people there when we worked out the debt. The Kulanu Hiskan, we all agreed. Shu Pikeach Gamor. He seems fairly normal. B'chol Masav Diburo Masav Matano. Okay? V'chein Shemati Shkolei Tshesha Be'ed HaVib HaYakei. So now things look good. Okay, here's the problem. While I was going him, trying to get a sense of him, Amarli Shiblibo Adai Machzik Shuhu Mashiach. What does he say at the time to get? You should know, Rabbi, it's still true that I'm the Messiah. Okay, it's true that I'm not climbing in trees now, and I'm not going around naked, but I've not altered my fundamental belief at the core. Okay, so now Rav Moshe wants to know, based on all that, is the get valid, right? He would like to free this woman, something we care greatly about. At the same time, right, it makes sense in the legal system that if you're not mentally capable, you can't do things, right? You can't enact a marriage, you can't enact a divorce, etc. So now we need to define, how do we define sanity in the halachic system? Okay, Sroli.
Super questions. One, with the shoghid, do you just go through like a cross part of the
but we're going to find out right now. That's exactly our question.
No, outside of the gap. Like just in order to
we're going to try to figure out how one establishes who a shoghid is. Okay?
And is it in,
Zach.
So does this mean that a woman married someone comes and say, like, they can't get divorced at all? Or is like there another mechanism to say, like, she didn't know before? The
look, it's true. Let me make one point here, guys. Because obviously the Aguna problem is a well-known conundrum. I think this case is morally a bit different than the average case. Okay, obviously, if you have a recalcitrant husband, so like the moral equation is pretty easy, right? The husband's acting in evil fashion, and we should find some way to coerce the get. Right? I think when a spouse goes insane, it's a lot more complicated than that. Right? Because you might, again, I don't mean difficult, but you might say that's what it means to be loyal to marriage, right? That you take care of the person even if they go insane. So I just want to point out, like, I think the moral issue here is much greater. Okay, yeah.
If he is insane, why would the original marriage...
Ah, here we go. Excellent. Okay, so Daniel, we're going to see guys... I'm going to ruin the drama. Rav Moshe's going to allow the get, okay? But we're going to see about 4 or 5 different arguments of Rav Moshe Feinstein why the get's allowed. One possibility is what Daniel just suggested. Maybe instead of saying that the fellow is mentally capable at the time of the get, the alternative is to say he was mentally incapable at the time of the marriage, right? So you could say the marriage was never really a valid marriage. That is one possibility, Daniel. I just point out one thing. What if we think this guy goes back and forth? Meaning, what is one of the possibilities looking here? When he's doing all these things, that's when we should decide he is a shota. Then he's not mentally capable. When he's not doing all these things, then people go back and forth, right? So what if we say at the time of Kiddushin, he was not in his tree-climbing, pontificating mode, and therefore the marriage is valid? Right, so you have to figure out, because he goes back and forth, that's part of the situation, you're also, yeah.
If we go by that, if we say that he was sane because he wasn't doing those things, he's not doing those things right now.
Okay, excellent. So you're right, Daniel, very clever, except for one thing. What did he tell Rav Moshe? I still think I'm the Mashiach.
Yeah, I assume he meant that he thought that...
Okay, good, we'll get there. Very good, Daniel. Okay, who else is coming? Yatani.
So in the Gemara, they typically group Shota and Erev Kalt on
together. Excellent.
So can we maybe look, and there's an extreme case also about... Like a cheros, or someone who's like deaf, and then, well, what happened if you were deaf and then you stop becoming deaf? Or even the extreme case of a katan, where only when he's like, he starts as a katan, but then he becomes a gadol. So maybe that.
Look, your parallel is correct. That those seem to be 3 people that we say don't have mental capacities in halacha. But I think if you think about it for a second, though, their getting out of it is different. Meaning, a katan almost by definition is a like a temporary problem, right? But
you can say maybe this is a temporary.
Yeah, but again, but I would say katanim tend to get older, right? I wouldn't say shotim tend to get saner. That's
compared
right.
To a cheresh, like someone who's deaf and then...
Interesting. Look, I'll make one point in terms of Tani's question. A cheresh in Gemara, in this context, means who?
Deaf.
A deaf mute, right? Obviously, if you're only deaf or only mute, there's no reason to assume you don't have dot, you don't have understanding. But in the time of the Gemara, think about it also, we've come a long way in our ability to educate people who are deaf-mutes, but I'm proud for most of human history, you really didn't really learn very much if you were deaf-mute, and therefore you didn't have sufficient dot to make render decisions. So your pal is going to come a little bit later. Just hang on to your pal.
The concept of in sickness or in health till death do we part is a Christian concept. The Jewish view of divorce is very different.
Okay, that's true. I didn't say we're the same as the Catholic Church. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that loyalty to your spouse is a Christian concept.
Other concepts that we're discussing of Megachot and also Mishnayot about the circumstances under which divorce is permissible.
Okay, you're right. I'm not against divorce in this context. I just wanted to point out that I think if most of us hear the word Aguna, we're in a very particular moral space, right? There's an evil husband here, and the answer is clear. I just think when your spouse has mental issues, it's not the same case at all.
If your spouse is suffering, then the person, has to be a recognition that the person himself is suffering, but those around the person is also suffering.
Okay, all right. Life is about balancing ethical responsibilities. Yeah.
Is a shota a status that can go back and forth? Even though the actions aren't manifesting, once you're a shota, aren't you always a shota? Isn't there always that little bit
Why should it be impossible to recover in life?
I don't know. Do we not have a fear that there's some... I don't want to say that you can't go back, but isn't there some fear that if you're not mentally stable at one point, then maybe in the future it might re-manifest?
Oh, but okay, but maybe we don't have to live in fear. We have to judge you as you are in front of us today. You seem perfectly capable and competent. Okay, thank God you overcame your brief bout of mental insanity.
Is that how a shota is in the Gemara? Can the status change?
There is let's see, who's going through this here? Can we prove to you from the Gemara that your status could change? Okay, who here is learning Rosh Hashanah? Okay, you're probably up to this towards the end of the Masechet. In the mitzvah Shrichot Kavana, remember when the guys forced eat matzah?
Oh, yeah.
Remember this case there called Itim Chalim Itim Shota? What would that mean, Itim Chalim Itim Shota? Someone who has periods where he is mentally incapacitated, periods where he's fine. But that's the word Chalim, right? Okay? So apparently there is such a phenomenon in halacha. Yeah, we're good? Yeah, Ben. Okay, look, so you're right, Mekach Tot could come into play here, but actually Ramosha is not going to bring it up. And since it's really going to take us afield, I'm not going to address it, have the parameters set. Okay? We're good? Okay, great. Yeah, please, Mr. Mayor.
There's another subcategory of a person whose insanity is under his control. There are people who can take medication
okay.
and refuse to. And so where do they...
Okay, that's a great question, but I'm going to duck it for now, if you don't mind. Okay? All right, here we go. So let us go to... give a book recommendation. Okay, so this guy named Andrew Solomon wrote a book called Far From the Tree. Have you ever read it? Okay, it's an excellent book where he talks about parents who are different from children. A lot of it is medical conditions. Like that's why I titled it Far From the Tree. Here the apple did fall far from the tree. So it's a little bit of a sad book, but he goes through children with schizophrenia, children with autism, children with Down syndrome. And it's a big theme in the schizophrenia one because a lot of patients don't like the way the medicine makes them feel. So if you're curious about the topic, it's a very good book. Okay, so you guys go to Shir Kol, you get good book recommendations. Okay, let's go to the Gemara in Chagiga. Okay, so the Gemara in Chagiga is going to try to define who a Shota is. Okay, let's get started here. Okay, Zeb, I'll get to it in a few minutes. Talking about Ezu Shota, so it gives three examples. Hayotze Yechidi Belaila, someone who goes out alone at night. V'halan Beveit HaKvar, or you're sleeping in a cemetery. V'amakarei Ksuto, you're tearing your garments. Okay, so these are three different things someone could do in the Gemara times and seems to be a manifestation of insanity. In Rav Huna Amar, Achi Kulam Bevarachat. What does Rav Huna claim? If you're just in one of these items, that doesn't mean you're insane yet. You need all of them. Rav Yochanan Amar Filu Bachat Mehen. Now, I'm not going to do the rest of the Gemara, just going to run out of time, but I think we're already pointing to something quite interesting here. You might call this Meshuga Ledavar Echad. What if some people like this one area of life where they manifest craziness, but you get them in any other area and they seem perfectly normal, right? So should we take that davar echad as a sign of their status in general and just say now they are considered shota for across the legal system, or should we say no, not necessarily? If you manifest insanity in three different areas, that means that you are a shota. But if it's very limited, there's one area where you struggle, maybe we could kind of limit it to that area. So that's a pretty important question. Okay? And that's going to be the key to this fellow. Because notice one of the things Rav Moshe said, even when he was doing all those things, What did Rav Moshe point out? If you got him on a non-messianic conversation, he was totally fine. You could discuss, you know, the best recipe for chili with him. That was fine. Right? It was only things that touched on Mashiach where things got tricky. Yeah, JJ. Look, I'm skipping some nuance in the Mishnah just because I'm going to run out of time. And I want to get to the Rav Moshe's arguments. Okay? So let's see how this plays. Let's go to the second page. Now, before we get to the whole discussion there, I just want to point out an important Rashi. Okay, because the Gemara said Ezu Shota, but like everything else, context is crucial. So what was the context when we needed to define a Shota? So let's look at the first Rashi there. Ezu Shota. Hamor b'chol makom. When is the Shota? Pater min ha-mitzvah. If you're insane, you don't have halakhic obligations. You don't have to put on tefillin every day. Umina onesh. You can't be punished for transgression. The ain kinyan o kinyan. You can't acquire things. You don't have the right decision-making capability. The ain mimkro mimkar. Now notice what has Rashi done? According to Rashi, how widespread was the context of the Ezeh Shota question? Was it widespread or narrow? It was what? It was pretty wide, right? It was all of halakha, right? Are you Shota for acquisitions, mitzvot, liable for punishments? So that's kind of important because maybe someone's going to claim that you'll have a different definition in different areas of halakha. That when you learn seriously, it's one of the things you have to ask. Wait, should we define Shota the same way for every area of the halakhic system? But Rashi gives a pretty long list here. I'd say it sounds like this is an across-the-board definition. Okay, great. Let us now go to Tosfot. And again, I think a lot of our question is if you're meshuggah in one area, does that... But they even begin a phrase. You want to do like a good yeshivish phrase. Like, let's say there's somebody who, like, every shiur discusses the same topic. Right? So you might even say, here's the yeshivish phrase, you say, that person is meshuggah ledavar echad. Right? They're crazy for, like, one... they're insane about one topic. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Rashi's saying in a way sounds like Chayra.
No, but it's not a... We're not punishing that. We're just taking...
You're not... We don't, like, hold under our laws. You're not going to be punished from our laws. You can't own, you can't sell.
Yeah, but there's no social shunning going on here.
No, I'm saying it's Chayra. It's in the Chayra without
like,
the stigma.
He's saying it in a way that's merciful.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny. Like, Chayra without the stigma is like saying it's like, you know, incarceration without the jail. Okay? Okay? All right. Thanks, Lily. Okay, good opportunity. I've been waiting for that line for years. Okay. Okay. So let's go to... Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, this is kind of nitpicky, but it's important for the Aguna. If you can't acquire something, how can you sell it?
If you... No, because again, you might have inherited something. Or what if you're the kind of person who goes back and forth? So when you're... Let's say you're sane for the first 25 years of your life. So you bought a lot of stuff. Now, unfortunately, you go insane. Okay, now you can't sell. Okay?
There is some validity to Chayim without the stigma. Because Chayim means that you're, like, you're not accessing the curriculum, you're not accessing what's in front of you, and then there's social stigma, which is separate. So those two concepts can exist separately.
Okay. Okay. Let's go to the Tosfos. Okay.
Agree or disagree? And you see that
you want to force me? I disagree. Okay.
You don't think it's possible for somebody not to be...
That's what's the whole point of Chayim? Chayim is supposed to create pressure on you because you're estranged from society.
Right.
Right. So what's Chayim without the stigma at that point?
No, but I think, I don't know whoever said that concept is just looking at this one aspect of Chayim rather than Chayim in its entirety.
Okay, but it's kind of the essence of it is
so
not there.
So it's an argument of just terminology, misapplying the term.
Okay.
Chayim, but conceptually there's some validity.
Okay, see, so you have a defender here. Okay.
Isn't that the concept of
this yeshiva? Okay, good. Even yeshiva Eilu, you can still disagree with an idea. It's okay. Okay, let us go to Tosfos here. Okay? Let's go to Tosfos. Okay. Derech shtod afil b'chad nami. V'chi tema d'lo yemuad d'shtod rak l'oto davar. So Tosfos raises this question. We only see that you're crazy about one item. U'be'inan t'lata k'di laksit d'shot t'kol miwe. So I'm not going to do the Tosfos, it's a little complicated, but look at the last line. Dehacha kivin shu shote ba'achat. Okay, vada yesh lakziko b'cheskat shote b'chodavar. There it is. There's the line. Since you're shote ba'achat, you reveal forms of insanity in one area. So yesh lakziko. What's the shorish there, guys? A chazaka. What's a chazaka? An assumption. That's going to be a key word for emotion. If you're shote in one area, we should assume, chazaka is like a halachic presumption. What should we assume? You're a shote l'chol davar. That you are a shote all over the place. Now, in theory, you might think this is going to be problematic for our case. Because what does Tosfos seem to say? Well, if you're shot in one area, the default at that point is that you're shot all over the place. But Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting reading of this Tosfos. In case any of you got to it, guys. Okay, we'll do it outside because we're running out of time. But it was in Source 9. Did we get to it? How does Rav Moshe want to read the Tosfos? Wait, if you're when do I employ a chazaka? Yes, Sam.
Don't pass it up.
Ah, very good. What do we give a halachic assumption? We don't know. So we don't know, like any system, we need to make certain assumptions. But what if you know the truth? Well, if you know the truth, you don't have to go to chazaka. So as Moshe claim, if somebody could establish that they are same in general with one exception, so we should assume they're same in general with one exception, right? This is only in the absence of knowledge. Haven't got it? So according to Rav Moshe, we already have one thing to rely upon. Rav Moshe's, one of his arguments is going to be, based on this Tosfos, if you're only a meshuga in one area, we can limit your insanity to that area, assume you're competent in other areas, and therefore this fellow will be allowed to give his wife again. And again, his reading of Tosfos is, Tosfos was just making an assumption, it's a chazaka. But if we could actually clarify the reality, everyone testifies that you're not a shota outside of that area, we're okay. Okay, Sam, very good. Then you read this whole sheet?
No, we just skipped tonight.
Okay, how do you know to skip tonight?
Zeb thought it looked
interesting. Wow, okay. Zeb, very clever there. Well done. See, Russ, your son is a good skimmer somehow. Okay, he honed in on the key source there. Okay, great. Okay, let us go now. If we go to the Middle Ages, of course, we have the Ashkenazi Jewish community and the Sephardi Jewish community. If Tosfos might be the most essential authorities in France and Germany, let's move to the Spanish world, the Sephardi world, and go to the Rambam. Is the Rambam going to be on the same team here? Okay, where's that? Yeah, we're going to the Sephardi world now. And even before the 1500s, right up your alley.
Before the
wrong turn. Okay, here we go. Way to go. Guys, for the parents who do not know, Zach Ben Ezra is still living in 1200 Spain. It's really exciting. Okay? It's very exciting. Okay, so let's go to the Rambam. Okay? Zach, are your parents also still in 1200 Spain?
I'm actually in Poland.
Okay. Okay. All right, very good. Okay. So, source 5. Hashot pasul edim in Torah, with fish eino ben mitzvot. Now, this is an error we haven't seen yet, but again, if you don't have mental capacities, you can't be trusted as a witness. Right? So, saying Hashot is invalid for testifying. But now we think we're going to see a couple of surprising things about this Rambam. Okay, I should have stopped for a second. I should have stopped before the word lafi. How should the sentence end? A shota cannot testify because he doesn't have dat. Right? That's what it should say. That's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says to be testify, you have to be obligated in halakhic observance. Since we've already exempted him from halakhic observance, therefore he can't be a witness. So already the reason is kind of surprising. Let's keep reading. Before we move on, notice what the Rambam did, I think, quite reasonably. You could get very caught up in the Gemara's specific examples. What did the Rambam say? Don't get so caught up in them. They're just examples. Like, why should that exhaust the list of ways to be crazy? There are infinite ways to be crazy, right? Those are just three examples. Any way you do it would work. But then he goes on to say, he seems totally sane outside of that issue. So now it sounds like Rav Moshe Feinstein might be in trouble. Again, how did Rav Moshe Feinstein want to read the Tosfos? That if I'm insane in one area, I'm still considered sane legally for the rest of Jewish law. Okay, but the Rambam seems to explicitly deny that. Okay, everyone with me so far? Now again, it could be Rosh, okay, we can rely on the Tosfos, but now legally things have gotten much more complicated. Yes, Sam?
I feel like the first one we looked at, it didn't just treat the examples, but it said you have to like one of them or three of them. So like, the fact they're arguing about that means that
You could read that as, can it be one thing or does it have to be multiple things? Maybe that's a different way to read it. But you're right, it's an interesting question, just ask Sammy. Yes, Tani?
I think the reason you could say that Rosh and Rambam read differently is the example of what a shot is, because it shows that going to Rav Moshe wouldn't be part of from all the Torah because he's not really crazy, he can do the other things. It's like they're talking about two different kinds of shotas.
What are the two kinds?
One that's part of from all the Torah, and one that's only crazy in one area. If you're crazy in one area,
No, but didn't Rav Moshe just tell me that if you're shoked in one area, you're shoked for everything?
No, Rav Moshe, no.
That's right, the Rambam, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Didn't the Rambam just tell me?
So I'm saying, you could read that the Rambam and Rav Moshe talk about different kinds of shotas.
What is the Rambam talking about?
A shota who's crazy, who can't do anything, he's puzzled for maybe he can't. He's
because why?
Because he's putting for all mitzvot.
Why is he putting for all mitzvot?
He's crazy in everything.
But he's not, he just said he's only shoked in one thing. Right?
But it's also a different criteria, the three different things that the Rambam says, which is different than the three things that are mentioned in the Gemara.
Okay, but once the Rambam thinks the Gemara is just examples, it's okay if the Rambam gives other examples.
Okay, but the Rambam also says all the time, he says, in terms of finding consistency in this and Rav Moshe,
no, but you can't stop the sentence there. Tamid bedavar min advar.
Bedavar min advar,
in one matter.
But doesn't that mean... Doesn't the Dvarim refer to the three things of Mishaber Kalim?
No, but it's Dabar Min HaDvarim. He is always crazy in one of the things.
Right, but it just means that his outer behaviors are always this way. But
in one area.
The Dabar Min HaDvarim. In one of these three things, then he is always...
Yes, he always, let's say, is
or
naked.
Or throwing stones, or...
Yes.
Doing one of these things. In
okay.
In the case of Moshe Feinstein addressed, he wasn't always doing that.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so that's possible. That is possible. Okay, that's possible. That is possible.
But he's always thinking he's a Mashiach.
Okay, good. No, you're right. That is a possibility. Okay, so now let's see what Moshe Feinstein is going to do. Now, interesting, Moshe is going to try to co-opt everybody. Okay, often, it's going to give you a way the halachic system works, right? Sometimes you do what's called various snifim lahakel, branches, which is, how does that work? I don't have any one argument that absolutely wins, but if I could combine multiple arguments, then I could be winning, right? Either this could be true, or this could be true, that could be true. And then any one of those arguments doesn't have to be an absolute winner on its own, but the cumulative force is what makes me be lenient. So Rav Moshe is going to do that over here. He's going to say, I've got a number of arguments, and if you put them all together, you could explain why I'm going to allow this divorce. Okay, so if we go to... it's source 10. I'm going to go to 10, 11 now. We'll skip to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay? In source 10, the Rambam says, Rav Moshe says, Ach mash omid negdi neged zeim divya Rambam. The Rambam seems to be against me. Right? Even if you're crazy in one thing, it's across the board. But then 11, he has a very interesting finish. He says, V'anachon laniyot dati davar chadash d'akash hatuva. He has a new question on the Rambam. Okay, Zev, I'm sorry to get to 1 minute. My time, Anakar Rambam did the Maushota Davka Bilchot Edut, below Bishar Halachot. Now, this is a fascinating point. Okay, it's interesting to think not just about the content of what someone says, but the placement, especially Rambam. Rambam is a super organized thinker. In fact, his whole halachic code is about reorganizing the Gemara in a much more clear and coherent fashion. That's what the Mishnah Torah does. So, think about it. You could ask in the Rambam very frequently, he could have categorized the halacha in various places. Why did he put it in a specific place? I'll just give you one interesting example. Let's say you're the Rambam and you want to talk about Hallel, reciting Hallel. Where in theory could you put it?
Zmanim.
Yeah, but in even more specific, you obviously write Zmanim. Is it going to be in Hilchot Yom Tov, Hilchot Pesach, right, Hilchot Chanukah Purim? I don't know where the Rambam put it. Chanukah Megillah. Okay, there is. Okay, no. That's a okay. Okay. So it's in Megillah of Chanukah. So that's interesting. Like, why did the Rambam choose to put Hallel in that section? So think about it. Shota is going to come up all over the place. Where could Shota come up? Laws of marriage, laws of divorce, laws of acquisition. And to make it even better, right, the Rambam's Mishnah Torah is a lot of different volumes here. Even in the short set, with the small print, it's five volumes. Eidut is towards the very end. So the Rambam does not give his definition of insanity till the end of the work. Now, why is that? Why should you wait for Eidut to talk about it?
One reason could be conceptual, because Eidut is something that involves many mental processes. To visualize it, you have to understand it, you don't have to come within a system or testify in a way.
Good.
Accepted to other
okay,
people.
See, you're,
and you also
okay,
have
just,
that
okay,
internal.
I don't even like, you're doing great points, but I don't even dominate this year. So can you give other people a chance? Okay? Okay, so, the point is made here is correct, which is that maybe the definition for Eidut is different than the definition for other things. Okay, maybe there is a different definition, and therefore the Rambam gave it Eidut, because it's not the same for everybody else. Now, everyone could see how that's going to help Ramosha. What would Ramosha argue now? If you're a shota for one thing, you're always a shota as far as testimony is concerned. But that doesn't mean if you're a shota for one thing, you're always a shota as far as all those other halachot were concerned. Right, so at that point, Ramosha has opened up a very nice possibility how even Rambam could be on his team. Now, obviously, you'd have to work out the svara, why that should be. But one other thing that's going to help a lot is maybe that's also why the rationale has shifted. Again, if the Rambam was in the world of kinyanim, or the world of marriage, what would he have said? What's the problem for Shota? That he lacks that. Eidu is a different factor. The issue is chiyuvin mitzvot. So again, I haven't worked out the logic at this point, but maybe we're really doing apples and oranges. Eidu is about chiyuv mitzvot. It's a broader invalidation. And kinyanim and other things are about dot, and dot maybe could be determined on a category by category basis. So if Ramosha is right about that, then things are great. Now Ramosha has kind of co-opted everybody, right? Why is Tosfos on Ramosha's team? Because it's only a chazaka. But if you can establish that you're sane in other areas, we go with that. Even, now he's even co-opted the Rambam, because says Rambam only had this broad psul in the world of testimony. Maybe the logic, the internal logic of testimony is different than the internal logic of other things. And again, if you're sane in certain areas, that's good enough. Zach. Actually, Zach's doing a little time. Sorry, Zach.
Is the Masvoka Tosfos Rambam, Nachman Tyler, to interpret Rabbi Yochanan's statement?
Look, I did cheat one thing here, Zach. I've been unfair. I didn't work out how this emerges from the Gemara Chagiga. Okay, you're right, which I should have done, but, you know, given the local parameters and limitations of time, I chose not to. But you're right, you could... That is a weakness of this year. I didn't show exactly how this all emerges from Chagiga Daf Gimel. Luckily, Zev, one day you'll be Rebbe Yeshiva, you'll make up that missing piece. Yeah, Zev.
Is the discussion.
Okay. Yes, yes.
Says, Lepisha Eno Ben Mitzvah, is a divorce not also a mitzvah? Like, would that not also qualify as a mitzvah part? Instead of like a transaction, would it be a mitzvah? But a divorce, that's like a.
Look, it's true that divorce appears under the 106 and 13 mitzvah. That being said, it's not obvious that you have to be chayav mitzvot, right? That's the same right there. Okay, you're asking a good question. Yeah, Mr. Benefit.
Do we know, maybe we do, where Rav Moshe is actually trying to go? Do we know the answer he's trying to get?
Well, he wants to allow this one. He would like to free this one, that's for sure. Okay, and he's going to have two more arguments why. Okay, as was argued before, Rav Moshe says Jewish spouse don't be trapped in a difficult marriage, and he's looking for a hetter, that's for sure. Okay, Daniel.
So he said in one case the issue is a chiyuv mitzvah, in the other case is an issue of dot.
Well, he wants to claim that eidut is not a function of dot, but is a function of mitzvot, and kinyanim are a function of dot and not mitzvot.
Well,
and therefore the criteria could be totally different.
What's the reason for...
Okay, so, you know what? I'm going to say the reason for the... I want to sneak in two more arguments, and hopefully we'll get to the very end. Is that okay, Daniel? Okay, but if I don't get to it, everyone should read 11 carefully, and Rabbi Yisrael Zalman Melter back in 8 had something very similar. Okay, just again, I ran out of time here, but hopefully we'll have a chance to get to it. You know what? Let me do two more arguments, and I'll take more questions, okay? Okay, let's go to page 12, because this is just really interesting, the last two arguments. Okay? Actually, we'll see three more arguments. Okay, we're going to go out of order. We'll go in the backwards, because I think the most humorous one is the first one. I know probably I shouldn't make jokes about insanity, but, you know, what can you do? Okay, let's look at the last paragraph first. Okay, so what do you have most of so far? His basic argument so far is to say... Maybe if you're Meshuggah L'davar Echad, you're not a Meshuggah across the board, and therefore the smell could give again. Okay, let's look at the last paragraph. L'chein mehani tlatatame, those three reasons, u'betzirof, and I'm joining, l'snif that arash m'shapir of Igder, t'daf kahani dalet ha'mefreshim b'chagiga avishota, v'lo b'davar acher. So apparently, there is an opinion that one to read Chagiga, that those examples were not examples, they were actually exclusive. Now again, I don't find it so reasonable, but there is such a position out there. Okay, so there was a Rishon who wanted to say, in halakha, the only limited ways to become a shota, if you don't manifest those ways, you're not a shota. So obviously, whether or not that's the mainstream position, it would solve our problem here. So Moshe adds it as another potential branch to hang on, so to speak. Okay, let's go back to the previous paragraph. Let's make you happy, Daniel Shanis. Yesh od lahatir bofidan, da gam bi'ein ha-kidushin. Shobeid Chalmuto, when he was Harishon, he was healthier. Nami Hichzik Atzmo L'Mashiach B'Libo. What do you want to claim? If we'd asked the guy at the time who was Kiddushin, maybe they even interviewed him, he would have said, yeah, I'm the Mashiach, it's true. Again, I'm not climbing trees right now, I'm not parading around naked right now, not grabbing Sifrei Torah, But I've been the Mashiach all the way through, and I knew it all the way through. So then you could say your argument. Say, well, almost kind of, whichever way you want to slice it. If you can tell me this guy's sane, he could give a get. If you can tell me this guy's insane, so the Kiddushin wasn't a Kiddushin either. Right? So another way, as Daniel suggested, to get to Rav Moshe's desired conclusion is to invalidate the Kiddushin. Because I think already we have three good arguments to hang your head on. A, maybe he's not a Meshuggah across the board, and therefore he could give a get. B, maybe he was also problematic at the time of the Kiddushin. Three, maybe the Gemara gives an exhaustive list and he does not meet the criteria of a Shoth in Halakha. Okay, now we get to one last argument. Yeah?
But those arguments contradict each other. You can't say that, oh, sometimes you're crazy, so therefore, like, sometimes you're crazy, you could give a get now because you're sane. Oh, but or you can say, oh, by the time of the marriage, you were crazy, so we could be assuming that you're crazy all the time.
No, but I would say it differently. It's not a problem. The arguments contradict each other. Meaning, if I start with assumption A, I could get to a good conclusion, a leading conclusion. If I start with assumption B, I could get there also. So that makes it a stronger case.
Yeah, but I don't. I mean, because both the assumptions, it doesn't. It seems like you'd have to make them for every case. I don't think you could pick
any. No, I'll give you an example. Let's say I have some kind of political issue, a hot potato political issue, and in some crazy twist of fate, I could give both liberal and conservative reasons to come to the same conclusion. Right, so that would be a strong argument, right? If I start with liberal assumptions, I get to X. If I start with conservative assumptions, I also get to X. Right? Doesn't that strengthen the argument?
It's like practically, because we don't just care about the conclusion; we also care about the means, right?
On some level, in Pesach, where the conclusion where it's really at, right?
I mean, I don't think it's dishonesty.
No, but I don't see why it's dishonest. It's just saying that in my analysis, the total package, there's more and more reason to be lenient over here.
Thought that in the beginning and still thinks that now, then it's not the opinion that she participated in. But it's not a question of whether it's craziness or not. Maybe Halacha doesn't consider him crazy, but that's not the deal that she thought she was getting.
Okay.
So you can, even if you take a different approach, one approach is to say, you either choose this or you choose that, but you get to the same place. And the other approach is to say, no, you have to find the rationale to connect all the different approaches with one svara. And there's a way to do that also.
Okay. Then we'll choose that more later, okay?
Okay,
let's go to the last argument. Okay? Top paragraph here. The Hine Levad Heter Zeh. Now, I have to admit, I'm doing this mostly because it's the most intriguing argument. I don't think it's the best argument, actually. But in some ways, the most intriguing. The Ein Lachshivo L'Shota Klal B'Zeh Shemaximal Mashiach. Who says he's a Shota? Because he thinks he's the Messiah. K'mo Shalenu Nechshav Misha Ovid Avodah Zarah Eitz V'Evan L'Shota Av Shavad Yushtut Gadol. So now I'm going to make an interesting point. What's the last point to be made here? Not every foolish thing people do makes them insane. There are a lot of foolish things that people do out there. Okay, you know, people think it's more fun, I don't know, to go to clubs than to stay home and read Dostoevsky. That doesn't make them a Shota, right? There are all kinds of foolish things out there, right? So you have to define, like, where's the border? Like, where's the border between foolishness, stupidity, and insanity? Right? It's not such an easy thing to pin down. Okay, and then Rav Moshe goes even further. Okay, he says, this is the most fascinating part. Okay, I'm now skipping down to the line because Efshar Ladun, which is the fifth line. Efshar Ladun od yoter shegam kol ma'asav hashtutim. What about all, you say to Rav Moshe, what about all those crazy things he does? Again, pontificating and going around naked. Okay, shenam shech mitzah tuto shum Mashiach shelefi da Torah utikun olam ena machshivin ato lo shotel kol davar. Excuse me. The kol davar shadim osem mitzah cheshbon eiz a shita v'derech shemachzik b'dato av shi siklut gdola lo nechshav shota b'zeh. Can you tell me, any shiva guys, what was his argument just now? What about the climbing trees and the nakedness and the, yeah, exactly. Exactly. He would say those are all logical, right? Once he made that foolish first move, he's the Mashiach. Okay, but if you're the Mashiach, that's what you should be doing, right? You should be pontificating on the street corners. So therefore, he says maybe this is just one big foolishness and not, in fact, an act of insanity. So let's make one point about this, then I'll sum up this year and take last questions. Okay, so I obviously Rav Moshe is a much bigger topic problem than I am, and he certainly gave a good psak here to allow this woman to be divorced. I'm not sure that last argument holds. I was actually once reading a book by G.K. Chesterton called Orthodoxy, and Chesterton argues that's exactly what a maniac is. What's a maniac? You have a very narrow circle, and you see everything within that circle. So once you start with that narrowness, everything makes sense. Like, let's say I'm paranoid. Okay, so if I start out with the assumption that the world's out to get me, indeed, that's just one thing. right? Everything else is logically follows, right? I should realize that, obviously, you know, Daniel Sheamus was obviously planted in this year to give me a hard time, right? And it's logical, right? If I start with the paranoia, then it's more logical, but maybe that's exactly what it means to be crazy. Okay, so I have to admit my sympathies are with Chesterton on this one. I didn't know there was a machloket at Ramosha and Chesterton about insanity, but let's take comments and I'll sum up the show. Yeah, Jacob Rappel.
Could you say that Ramosha is only trying to search in Aguna, we check.
No, there's no question about it. I would say, A, Ramosh is looking for leniency. He wants to free this woman. There's no question about it. It's one of four arguments. It's not the only argument. No, there's no question.
It's also he puts a weak stress.
Yeah.
Sure.
I have two questions. One, is it a possible argument that given this person's having a stroke that he's not able to fully uphold like the idea thing that he's doing, but that he's like,
designed. Okay, but why is that? How does that allow to get them? Look, again, it's interesting that Rav Moshe didn't go the Mekach Tod variety, but that's a whole other topic which I'm leaving aside.
And also, do we implement any questions or processes during the act of
injury to prevent this? Meaning, you think everybody who comes to get married should check their mental capacities? I think normally you assume if people are functioning normally that you know. What? Okay, right. That would, next time I perform a wedding, I'll ask the guy if he can see Moshe.
Are there any
you know what? To be egalitarian, I'm even going to ask first.
Then it'll be okay. Both.
None of the three of them is a formal prohibition. It's silly to sleep in a cemetery. It's not usher.
No, aren't there lying gemara that you shouldn't do these things? Like you shouldn't walk along.
That's a good question. Actually, a lot of akronim ask, isn't it a problem to go out at night? And there's a whole discussion with that. If you're curious, look at the Mefarshim. Yeah, I think it's in the Marsha, maybe Tur Yevin. That does get raised.
No, that's true, but like that is. I guess maybe like anything here, like you apply that here, and anything you do, even if there's somebody who says maybe that's just Jewish value, but it shows that it becomes a definition of
I just don't know why would you want to minimize shota to things that are prohibited, right? There are many ways to be insane. You could be insane in a very devout, pious way. Okay. Avi.
Is there any unanimous qualification on what it takes to be Mashiach?
Okay. Wait, Avi Fried, this is great. You say, I was simply insane. Maybe you won't be Mashiach. Oh, that's great. Wow, what a move. No one's ever made that point before.
I was
going
to say, if there was
unanimous qualification,
then he claims himself as insane. I'm sorry, say it again? If there was a unanimous qualification, wasn't that qualification,
then he claims. Right, but again, I don't think it's sad that per se. Imagine that you say, well, let's see if you could fit into the Rambam and Hilchos Malachim. If no, then you're insane. But it's hard to imagine that's what we worked it out. Okay, last couple of comments. Well, Daniel.
I feel like this question might be a little stupid if it is hard, but we say that in general, if a person does a sin, then they allow an insane to enter them.
Yeah, but again, you have to be careful about taking Talmudic hyperbole as law. It's true, Daniel's right. There is a Gemara that says, Ein adam osa avera ala imke nichnas bo roch shtut. You only do a transgression if some spirit overtook a foolishness or insanity overtook you. But that doesn't mean that everybody who did a transgression is insane. Right? You guys realize, when things lead to crazy conclusions, you should not, that's a good pun in this tense, actually, that you should not actually take them literally. Clearly, it doesn't mean that, right? Otherwise, we're all insane. Okay? Yeah, Zach.
Is there a legitimate grounds for divorce? If someone gets cancer or something, a physical ailment that someone develops after that?
Okay, it's a good question, but I just don't want to deal with it in the last minute of the show. Yeah.
I don't know how relevant this is, but it might be a longer tangent. What happens when you bring it down to America where we have somewhat of a definition of insanity?
Why? Look, I have nothing against America, but why should we follow America's definition? Why can't Allah have its own definition? Not in this kind of context. It's a much larger Shia. What Tehillim would do? But think about it. If you took your position to its fullest extent, it would basically undermine Allah totally. Right?
I guess, but this is a different idea.
Okay, same, but think about it. That would mean we can't see people high mitzvah when they're 13 because adults in America is 18. Right?
But you're not. If you still murder someone as they're
Okay, but I'm just saying, Dean Lublin doesn't mean that, as much respect as the American legal system, it just bulldozes all of Allah. Okay. All right, last thing, guys. Okay, I'll just do a quick summary, and we'll go to Mincha. Okay, again, I'm going to welcome the parents. You guys should all enjoy the weekend very much. Okay, so Moshe had the following four arguments. Okay, it's always good to summarize. Okay, what is his first argument based on Tosfot? That if you're crazy in one area, it doesn't mean you're crazy across the board. So that's why this help can give again. How did Moshe even call up the Rambam? The Rambam seemed against him. What did Moshe say? That Rambam that seemed against him was limited to Eidut, not to other areas of law. I admit, Daniel, I'm sorry, we never got to the real Sfar. Okay, we should read source 11 and get to the real Sfar why that is. But then that's still the first argument. But Tosfos wants to, Moshe wants to claim, Rambam and Tosfos would agree. Then, when he got to the last section, Moshe added three more arguments. Number one, what if the Gemara's examples are exhaustive? So then this fellow doesn't meet those criteria. Then Moshe said, the Daniel said this argument, maybe this fellow, if you're going to say he was insane at the time of the get, you could also say he was insane at the time of the Kiddushin. So then obviously there's no marriage. And finally, Moshe says, what I found the most humorous, of the argument, which is, okay, not every idiocy is insanity. And not only that, once you think you're the Mashiach, you should do all of those things, right? You should climb in trees and pontificate and walk around naked. And therefore, maybe the fellow's not insane. I agree. I think Moshe only added that as a fourth argument to add weight. And as people have said many times, you know, halacha tries to take human need into consideration. Certainly, freeing an aguna is in a strong sense of human need. And here, Moshe, as a young 34-year-old rabbi in Russia, already had the boldness to issue such a psak. All right. Everybody have a great Shabbos.
Okay.